Welcome, Ms. Stillwell. Welcome
well,
to the air,
thank
Ms. Stillwell.
You, Paul. Thank you. Thank you so much for that introduction.
It's quite an honor to actually, I mean, we've been talking back and forth in emails for a few years now, and I still feel like I could sit and learn from you for ages. What I'd like for you to do is to tell everybody a little bit about what you do for Campus Watch and what Campus Watch does for America.
Okay, sure. Well, Campus Watch is a project of the Middle East Forum, and we analyze and critique where due, and there it is often due, the field of Middle East studies, academia, in North America, so that's American and Canadian colleges and universities, and also sometimes where that impacts K through 12 education. You have a lot of these professors are they help approve textbooks and curriculum for use in K through 12. So it isn't just in college. And we're the only organization that focuses on Middle East studies specifically. And our website is the largest archive of Middle East studies related news on the internet. And I, as the West Coast representative, I focus on the West Coast. I'm actually a Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area native. And as you noted, a San Francisco State graduate. And so this is my backyard. We also focus on L.A., Seattle, you know, wherever these problematic professors, of which there are many, have raised their ugly heads. And what we sort of focus on, not simply bias, anti-Israel, anti-American bias, although that is often the problem, but sort of the problem of shoddy scholarship and the politicization of the classroom, you know, and where students are made to feel intimidated and that they can't speak out, and just the use, the misuse of education to push a political agenda. And there's so much of that in this field.
It's a surprising piece. I think one of the most fascinating things you did recently is you're talking about San Francisco State University in your article. I believe it was July. Is that right?
That's right.
And what I wanted to ask, I would love for you to go into great detail on this. San Francisco State University now has a special deal going with another university. And I think it's important that we understand what partnerships mean. I have a problem with colleges who make these partnerships or take these monies from organizations that are related to terrorism. Nazareth College of Rochester took $500,000 from the International Institute of Islamic Thought. Their head of the history department said, well, they don't do anything bad anymore, referring to a group that gave money to a terrorist entity related to Al-Qaeda. That is what IIIT does. They had the affiliations with Al-Qaeda. They had the affiliations with Hamas and all this, and yet they don't do anything bad anymore. It's a good enough excuse to take money from them. I was wondering if you could tell us about your story with San Francisco and how you are personally impacted by this.
Well, sure. And just jumping off topic for a second, but speaking to what you just said about IIIT, I like that as a shorthand, they have very close ties to the field of Middle East studies and to other aspects of higher ed as well, but largely Middle East studies. And I wrote about them in 2014, the annual conference of MESA, the Middle East Studies Association of North America. They hosted a IIIT reception at a nearby hotel, and I wrote about that under the title MESA and IIIT Islamists Infiltrating Academia, and just listed the extensive ties between the two. They endow chairs, you know, they have summer programs where they bring on professors to speak and take part in their educational programs, and as you may know, their sort of motto and what they are very open about their stated goal is the, quote, Islamization of knowledge. So
that's an important point. I just wanted to go back on that for a second just because this is my personal pet peeve. I'm sorry. It is my personal pet peeve with Nazareth College that they took all these funds. And IIIT, again, is what the International Institute of Islamic Thought calls themselves. They call themselves IIIT. I was present when one of them came to Rochester and gave a public speech, and I was just floored with the shenanigans that were going on, and that it's like they were treating us like we were stupid because we weren't Muslim, that we wouldn't possibly know all of what their intentions are. But yet, as you openly noted, stated that these things are publicly stated. They're part of their mission statements, and this is part of the insanity of it. IIIT, very outward Muslim Brotherhood representative group. It does sponsor entities. One of the things I've noticed, and you basically just referenced it, is wherever IIIT gets into and sponsors a chair or sponsors professors, they have a regular gathering of people who are they have a conference as soon as school's out, they'll have a conference, or it's just at the end of school. It's usually a spring conference. And they invite people to speak on a quote ecumenical topic, but the vast majority of speakers are 99% Muslim. Now, I've seen that happen here in New York State at different colleges. Are you seeing that on the West Coast also?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're sort of all over the place, and you know, they're not the. There's also the other organization that pops up all the time in connection with the field of Middle East studies is CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations. And you probably know, both these organizations were named in the 2007 Holy Land Foundation trial, which you referenced at the beginning of your show, talking about the civilization jihad. So important to keep noting that. So we have all of these organizations that we know are completely, are Islamist in their goals and their outlook, and that yet they are falsely named as just civil rights organizations for Muslims or as simply supporting higher education and things like that. But obviously they are pushing their own goals throughout higher ed, just as you get Saudi funding and funding from Islamist countries, which sort of does the same thing. A lot of the time people ask me, I think people think in a way that these professors are sort of created by these organizations and by the funding, like Saudi funding. And I would say more that it is a matter of a meeting of minds. I mean, they are attracted to this type of funding. Obviously, who wouldn't be to money? But they are like minds, and they are attracted to places where they can be either outright Islamists themselves. There are some professors we cover in that vein, or apologists for Islamists or Islamic terrorism. And so I don't think these professors were created. I think they were here, or some of them were from abroad and came here later. But they have found a very fertile soil and a lot of money in higher ed, and especially in the Middle East studies field. So if they come up all the time. It's also what I mentioned, CARE, they come up constantly. Every year now this is back to my backyard at UC Berkeley, we cover the Islamophobia Research and Documentation Project, which is headed up by UC Berkeley academic Hatem Bazian. And we can come back to him if you like later. I know he gets a lot of attention, as he should. And they have a conference, an annual conference every year. We've covered just about every single one, and CARE is a sponsor every single year. And you'll notice that most of these organizations are big on sponsoring conferences, professors, curriculum that has to do with promoting the idea that America is awash in, quote-unquote, Islamophobia, and that Muslims are victimized. And it's obviously in their interest to do so and to detract attention from the actual ills emanating from the Muslim world. So they really go hand in hand, these organizations and academia.
It's scary. It's scary how well they work together to get their message across. And it's very, very subtle. It's never upfront. Oh, this is our underlying purpose, what we want to do. It's always like, kind of creeping in the back door, You know, hey, look, we got all this money. You know, if you let us in the door, you know, we'll bring all these funds in. That's just one of the ways they do it. But yeah, it's a lot of times, like you said, it's a meeting of the minds. It's what they agree to a lot of the things beforehand. In my case, out here in New York, it was simply Dr. Shafiq, Muhammad Shafiq, moved into Nazareth College. They hired him. He was already working with Triple IT. He had published through them before. And he just simply convinced the Jewish president of a former Catholic college to just get the funds that were available to them. And that's where we now have an endowed Islamic chair, basically for life, at Nazareth College.
It'd be one thing if these chairs were actually putting out information and real scholarship and things that we could actually use, but, you know, all too often it's very biased and there's definitely an agenda attached.
That, to me, is the underlying problem. This is something to think about. And I think about the concept of scholarship from different point of view, probably than many other listeners. Being a public school educator, I have certain requirements upon me that have to do with scholarship. If I put something in print and it can be proven to be factually untrue, I could lose my job over it. Okay. If I'm publicly lying to students, I'm defaming somebody without evidence. There's moral clauses that have to do with education. You can fire someone for putting out false information. However, if you are a Muslim professor and you go out and you tell everybody in the world Islam means peace, or you say Islam means shalom, which is what happened here in Rochester, New York, with Dr. Muhammad Shafiq, they pretend that you never said anything. No matter if somebody went to the board of trustees and complained, he's just Muslim and he gets a pass. At least that's happening here. I'm sure it's, again, this, I'm on the East Coast. I'm talking to someone on the West Coast, and I think this is really fast. It's sentiments from the West Coast, and this, to me, is another fascinating part of how this conversation could go, because you're having the same issues on the West Coast.
We're having what? I'm sorry. Say that again?
The same issues on the West Coast, the colleges, the infiltrations happening over on the West Coast. Where they're getting into the colleges. I do want to give you opportunity to spend time talking about the story with San Francisco, though. I think that's more important right now.
Okay. I'm sorry, and I got off topic myself. And I just took you off speakerphone, everybody. I think this might sound a little better, and I can hear better. So I'm a graduate of San Francisco State. I'm dating myself here a little bit. I was there in the 90s, and I had some early glimmers, although I was not aware of a lot of these issues. As you noted, 9/11 was sort of my wake-up call. But I became, you know, aware of aspects of things that were going on early, and one of the things I saw at San Francisco State at the time I was there was just blatant anti-Semitism. There have been a series of, you know, very political murals that have been painted there at the behest of student groups mostly. And infamously, there's an Edward Said mural that's there now. That wasn't there at the time, but they were painting a Malcolm X mural. And there was a big controversy around it because the original version of the painting, in the background, there happened to be Stars of David and dollar signs dripping with blood, which was very subtle. And there was, at least back then, a controversy about it, and there was even a professor who got very upset about it and opposed it. And they ended up blasting the original mural, redoing it, sans dripping blood, Stars of David and dollar signs. And I don't think I fully grasped the enormity of it, but it got in there, got in my brain, and it was obviously uncomfortable being Jewish myself. And then years later, all of this sort of came back to me. I also saw years later how the kind of bias against college Republicans and things like that. But what's going on now, I've been following for quite a while in my time at Campus Watch a professor at San Francisco State University named Rabab Abdulhadi, and she's the director of the Arab and Muslim Ethnicities and Diaspora Initiative, which is a mouthful. It's part of Ethnic Studies, and it's one of the first sort of ethnic studies components devoted to Arab and Muslim studies. Again, which in and of itself might be fine if it was legitimate work, but it's completely politicized. And she herself is a anti-Israel activist and an apologist for Palestinian terrorism. She's one of a founding member of the U.S. campaign for the academic and cultural boycott of Israel. She goes way back. In fact, she taught at Birzeit University at one point in the West Bank. I've written quite a bit about her, and I just started in 2015, discovered that sort of rumors to the effect that San Francisco State was forming a partnership, what's called a Memorandum of Understanding, or an MOU, with An-Najah University, which is in the West Bank in Nablus. And I was, we were quite disturbed by this because this is a university that Hamas has described as, quote, a greenhouse for martyrs, and that has been well known for a number of years. Certain scholars like Matthew Levitt at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy has written quite a bit about Najah and terrorism, and it's noted that it's known for the terrorist recruitment, indoctrination, and radicalization of students. And we have written a series of articles, and we started at the same time asking, sending in inquiries to the university, to the president, Leslie Wong, San Francisco State president, asking for him to confirm this MOU. And we were met basically with deafening silence. They just refused to respond to our inquiries, over the course of many months. And there was no proof of the MOU. In fact, it remains that way, except for a sort of indirect reference at the SFSU website. It was kind of mysterious. So I kept writing about it whenever it would pop up. So, there were a couple of lectures that we covered and recorded in which Abdul-Hali, bragged about it, was very happy to talk about it. And then it kind of came to light to a lot of different people. In 2015, there was a reception for that for her academic unit there, known as Ahmed. And this was the first time that President Leslie Wong actually got up and talked about it and publicly admitted to the MOU. And he not only admitted to it, he talked about it in glowing terms and what a wonderful thing it was to do and that he should have done it years ago. And it's just on YouTube, there's a video of this reception, which didn't come to, our and others' attention for a little while. At that point, we sort of put it all together, basically had proof, and pursued it further, and were actually able to receive a copy of the MOU through a different organization that actually filed a California Public Records Act request, which is the California version of FOIA, basically. And so the MOU has been confirmed. And at that point, we decided to try to take action on this and really put the pressure on to see if we can get SFSU to stop, to end this MOU, to put an end to it. So we started a petition just last week. It's change.org. The title, it's a kind of a long one, but it's End SFSU Cooperation with An-Najah. Universities should not support glorifying terrorism. We got over 1,200 signatures in the first 48 hours, and now we're up over 1,500, and we've had some good media interest. And if you go to the petition, we list a lot of, different points of evidence of the not only actual terrorists that have been students at An-Najah and then perpetrated terrorist attacks, events that honor terrorists, quote-unquote martyred terrorists, all the time. There were at least two in 2016, but I'm sure there were more. This was just what was documented. And we also talk about Abdul-Hali's sort of anti-Israel bona fides, of which there are many. And the other thing that came to light in the articles, I wrote about three or four articles on this over the course of a couple of years, is that she has pledged to set up a student exchange program with An-Najah, this university out of which terrorism and terrorism glorification is a constant. So, we feel like that poses a significant security risk. They've also talked about there being faculty exchanges, and I should note that some of the incidents that we've talked about it that have happened there are not limited to students. There's also faculty going around
so
making
you're telling
these, you know, terrible
us
statements.
I'm sorry. You're telling us that these exchanges are taking place. Nazareth College had such an event where they had a bunch of exchange students from Afghanistan. Now, in the midst of this, three of them took off. And to this day, they only reported two of their names. And they never told us anything about any of the anything about what happened to them. They never put in paper if they found them. But what always got me, I even tried filing a FOIA to get information on the third person's name who was not revealed. And I was told, unless you have State Department clearance, I can't discuss any of this issue with you. And that was one of the local police, was a sheriff or, I can't remember, it was a sheriff's department. I couldn't even get a discussion going. So,
So that would, that's pretty damning right there about that student. I mean, you have to guess if they couldn't give you information. I should say that at San Francisco State, the student exchange program has not been set up. It's just that Abdul Hadi has expressed her interest and pledged to set one up on numerous occasions. In the MOU itself, they simply talk about faculty exchanges, campus visits, and, you know, the idea being that a student exchange program is something that they would develop over time. With her determination, I mean, she's been quite determined with the support of the president, Leslie Wong, as well, to set this MOU up. I don't doubt that she would achieve that if she was not didn't meet any kind of opposition. And there have been a lot of other organizations like the AMCHA Initiative that have, you know, written letters repeatedly and complaining, you know, and talking, expressing concerns about the MOU, not just us. But we were the first ones to put this petition out and kind of really put them on the spot about it. And we're going to be rolling out a little more information on this very soon, a press release. But we're also, you know, urging the California State University system to investigate the MOU and calling on California State Legislature and the education committees in Congress to conduct hearings into the matter. So we're going to keep pursuing it just as far as we can, just really put the pressure on. And we hope to end the MOU.
It's my understanding it's actually against the law to affiliate with a terrorist organization. And I'm kind of surprised that any an organization claiming to be educational, such as San Francisco State University, would affiliate with an organization whose government is that's running the government in the West Bank, Hamas, to even say that would be endangering your ability to function as an educational institution. I would think that they would be endangered of having their ability to function as an institution revoked by the federal government. Because isn't this – it's against the law for you and I to interact with Hamas. You know, definitely not illegal for then Senator Obama to interact with them. But, you know, nobody charged him for that one. And nobody charges him for interacting with them today, unfortunately, which is Hamas. And that the organization he interacts with today, that quite frequently, by the way, that is known as Hamas in America, is for those of us who are our regular listeners, that is CAIR in America. CAIR, the Council on American Islamic Relations, is really Hamas in America. And that's been established through federal courts. So it's not just me saying this. This has been established in federal courts. And the hilarious thing about it is, our current president meets with them on a regular basis. But if it's against the law, how can an educational institution affiliate with them? And this is one of the frustrations I have. And just to be clear so everybody understands, when you're talking about Wong, that is the president of San Francisco State University, correct?
That's right. And it's Leslie Wong, but he is a man. I have had people write to me and get mad at her, which I appreciate. But I'm just letting everybody know in case you send any letters. Yeah, well, I mean, one thing about to make clear, you know, the West Bank is still controlled by the Palestinian Authority. If so, if these universities were actually in Gaza, then I think you could pursue the line of thinking that you're talking about with Hamas. That said, the Palestinian Authority is, you know, no angel in this. You know, they're officially sort of accepted as an official organ, but many of the incidents that we've documented, and I have a much larger collection of extremism and terrorism at An-Najjar University, involve Fatah, or the Palestinian Authority, their arm, Fatah, and the glorification of their terrorism. And, you know, recently, finally, there's been some attention on the world stage to the kind of poisonous anti-Semitic incitement and medieval blood libels and such that Mahmoud Abbas engages in, you know, at the UN when he recently accused Israel of poisoning the water supply. And so finally, I think recently, this was amazing, the State Department actually stopped denying that it was anti-Semitic what they were putting out and actually acknowledged that there was some incitement. So simply, you know, so the Palestinian Authority isn't much better, frankly, in my view, than Hamas. And certainly its cultural, if you could call it that, sort of influence on these students. And it's also the divisions of which are pretty active right now. There's a lot of, you know, struggles going on over there between Hamas supporting students and PA supporting students, you know, have played out. What the trend has been is that the Hamas supporting and affiliated students is actually a group called the Islamic Bloc. At these universities, that's the Hamas affiliated, and they have been connected to numerous terrorist attacks going back to at least 2001. I'm sure there's more before then, but they are have been winning student elections, and it's been to the point where, in fact, at An-Najjar, they actually suspended their 2015 student elections indefinitely because they were afraid that the Hamas-supporting students were going to win. I mean, this was illegal, and we know the PA is not exactly democratic. But that said, they're trying to stave off the even worst Islamists. It's one of those cases where you're not really on either side. But in terms of the legality of it, you know, the Palestinian Authority is still the, you know, the officially accepted government there, and despite the fact that they incite to terrorism all the time, they've not been labeled as Hamas has, as an actual terrorist group. So I think that's how they sort of get under the radar here. But you have a student body that is so highly supportive of Hamas, and just, you know, everything. I mean, there is no separation in Palestinian universities between the wider society and the ideological and political currents in it and the university itself. I mean, now we have that here too. There's political groups on campus. That's fine. But in this case, really, when you have an entire society that revolves around so-called resistance, you know, that is dedicated to constant warfare against Israel and to inculcating children from the time they're born into hating Jews and being, you know, and hating Israel and turning them into good little soldiers. We've all seen the clips of the television shows with the little kids holding knives and so on. It turns out, you know, it goes from the time they're in first get in school and up through college. And by the time they're in college, most of these students, those who are inclined in that direction, are completely indoctrinated, and many of them actually get involved in terrorist attacks. And the whole campus culture has to do with glorifying terrorism. You know, there was a graduation ceremony where they have Hamas banners everywhere and students holding up three fingers to celebrate the Hamas kidnapping of the three Israeli teens. It's just everywhere. And so I don't think a lot of Americans understand. They think, oh, great, you have a partnership. It's a wonderful cultural exchange with a Palestinian university. On the face of it, there should be nothing wrong with that, right? But when you have a culture that's completely seeped into the universities that is devoted to violence and hatred and incitement, That is a problem. We see it as a problem when an American, you know, and frankly any Western or any diversity in a country that does not want to be associated with Islamic terrorism partners with one of these universities. It's a moral question, and it's also a question of security, as we said, if there's a student exchange program set up. And there's a real arrogance there about it. So we just want to finally put them on the mat on this.
I wonder how you could be on a board of trustees and not see a conflict of interest by okaying this memorandum of understanding, this agreement between the two schools. I don't know if, I mean, it sounds like, I believe it's Dr. Wong. Is it Dr. Wong? President of San Francisco State University could sign such a thing or have the board of trustees of the college approve this and not see conflicts of interest with the security of their own student body or safety issues for any of their Jewish students. A number of conflicts that could arise from this particular relationship. My understanding of what a board of trustees should do, not just the committee, but an individual trustee should do, is look at possible conflicts of interest and simply say, no, that's not good for our school. That's not something that we want to do. It could cause a conflict for our students, for our student body, for the alumni. And if they're only looking at the kids who are there and nothing more, they're not future thinkers. They're not thinking about the people who have an established relationship with a school. And I'm picking on you in particular, Cinnamon, because you're not just an alumni, you're one of the elite from the school. And that says something to me about how you should be respected when you do this, when you do come to them. And have you had an actual response from the college itself?
No, they've never responded to any of our inquiries. And that's I think that reflects, like I said, that arrogance and that kind of disregard for public opinion and for outside opinion that you find so often in the appropriately named Ivory Tower. And we find that all the time at Campus Watch in response to our criticism and now to other organizations criticizing higher ed. They often equate criticism with censorship. And they think themselves above any kind of accountability. And I think there's a real bubble world and the kind of arrogance there. But it is, there's a lot more pressure now. There are a lot more outside groups that are focusing. There are things that, a lot more outcry. You know, this also comes at the same time as student groups like SJP, Students for Justice in Palestine. And at San Francisco State, you have GUPS, the General Union of Palestinian Students. They have become, you know, more and more violent, disruptive. They don't just protest outside lectures when Israelis and other people lecture. They you know, now disrupt them. And so that's causing a little more outcry now. I mean, at the our petition, it turns out, sort of well-timed because, you know, President Leslie Wong has been under fire for the disruption in April. There was a talk by the Jerusalem mayor near Barakat that was very violently disrupted and shouted down with cries of long live the Intifada and things like that. And so there was a lot of outcry about that. And the investigation, there was an independent investigation, the findings just came out, and he himself admitted failed our students and that our inaction led to this.
That's actually something I wanted to read to everybody. I'm going to put the link in the chat room, and you can all read this on your own. But I'm going to read this quote investigation. Now, let me tell you how I found this link. I was on Facebook looking at the General Union of Palestine Students-GUPS SFSU, and they're laughing at this review. Now, they're mocking it. Mm-hmm. It's a good review. It's pretty, what I call, academically unbiased. I'm not looking for an academically unbiased review in a newspaper. I'm looking for an investigation that looks into what could be provided to provide security for my children. If I'm, you know, if I look at this as a school as a place for my kids to go, I want to know that my kids are going to be safe. So as you listen to this, I want you to think about, does this investigative report tell you how to keep your children safe at this school? Does it tell you that they're going to be safer in the future with what they've learned? This is from the Golden Gate Express, written September 3rd, and the title is Investigation of Barakat Protests Leads to New University Protocols. On September 1st, San Francisco State released an investigative report of the General Union of Palestinian Students protest of the San Francisco Hillel event with Jerusalem Mayor Nir Barakat. The report was accompanied by a five-step protocol for the university police and student affairs to handle future protests. In a letter released by President Wong about the five-step plan, he said there was a significant work to be done to improve the campus climate for students. Ensuring the campus is a safe environment for all students is my top priority for the coming year, President Wong said in a letter about the new safety plan. Please keep that in mind. I'm going to come back to that. The article continues. Following the controversial event in April, President Leslie E. Wong, yes, it is a gentleman, released a statement that there would be an investigation led by the Office of Student Conduct into the action by the protesters at the event. The report listed lack of preparation on behalf of campus police and student affairs as contributing factors to the event's disruption. The investigation revealed that the university did not have enough time to prepare for the event. Well, I will tell you, that is hard to swallow. They did not have a clear protocol for handling protests. Again, hard to swallow. Lacked cohesion between UPD and student affairs in handling the situation. That's unbelievable. University police chief, this is the killer for the whole article to me. University Police Chief Reginald Parson was at the event and, while out of uniform, attempted to calm protesters, which the report says led to further confusion. Some students from SF Hillel felt unsafe, but the investigation ultimately determined that the protests were directed towards the mayor and not towards the fellow students. The protesters were punished for unauthorized use of amplified sound as a result of the investigation, according to the report. So long live the intifada apparently is not something that an average Jewish person should be afraid of listening to. Mrs. Stilwell, do you agree with that?
No, I don't. No. And, you know, you called it that report. There's so many holes in that report on the investigation and so many things missing. And the fact that GUPS, General Union of Palestinian Students, said that they actually feel vindicated by the report. And they just sort of doubled down on their usual rhetoric, calling him, this was in a statement that they put out, calling Barakat, the Jerusalem mayor, mind you, a hate monger, and that the real crime was bringing him to campus. So there's so many problems with that investigation. And one of the, you know, and if you know sort of the background information, one of the real problems for us, you know, we're still pressing him to respond on with this petition, but it's clear that, you know, President Wong is himself a partisan. You know, at that reception I told you about in April 2015, he talked about the MOU, and he was completely unabashed about his glowing feelings. And he talked about a trip. He said, when I returned from Palestine, quote unquote, 2 years ago, and this was kind of a mysterious trip. We know that Abdul Hadi went there on a university-sponsored trip, which was largely set up to set up the MOU, by the way, about a year ago. But his trip we don't know about, but he referenced it himself, and he said, I want to be one of the first universities to sign an agreement with Anajah. And he said he was anticipating criticism about it, but he believed firmly not only was it the right thing to do, but we should have done it 50 years ago. He talked about how pleased he was to have, quote, attracted a group of radicals around me so that when I propose ideas that shape the academic community, they say we're right behind you. I think here he's referring in large part to Abdul Hadi and their sort of partnership. And then he praised GUPS, getting back to the Barkat disruption. He called them an inspiration for me and the very purpose of this great university. So I think even though he is, you know, is taking on the role of objective president here and university president and trying to sort of act like that's he's being responsible about all this with the investigation, it's on record that he himself is a partisan in this conflict and is very supportive of that student organization that's running around acting like thugs, disrupting events, and saying making anti-Semitic statements. So in my view, he really has very little credibility. And yet at the same time, he should still be pressed to act on these things in his capacity as president.
I have a question for you. One of the Cal in the chat room has mentioned the concept of Palestine houses on campuses. Are you encountering that on the West Coast?
That I haven't really run into, to be honest. I can take a good guess at what that's about, but I haven't.
Are you talking about something similar to Hillel?
Oh, okay. The situation up in Canada can sometimes be actually even worse. For instance, at York University, I know is a bad one. But I haven't. I will have to start looking into that. I'm guessing that is some kind of – they're trying to make some kind of equivalent to Hillel there. I will have to look into that. But you do get, you know, we don't focus on student groups at Campus Watch, but you get these, you know, academics and sometimes administrators who, in their own way, work hand in hand with some of these student groups and sort of tacitly support their bad behavior. And I think this is one of those cases. You might have heard about at UC Berkeley, the other local kind of story that's been kind of in the news lately from my neck of the woods, but at UC Berkeley, the professor we talked about, actually I don't think he's a full professor, but the academic Hatem Bazian, who is one of the co-founders of SJP and American Muslims for Palestine and has been affiliated with Kind Hearts charity going back to that 2007 Holy Land Foundation trial. So he has a long history with this big backer of BDS and boycotting it, and an anti-Israel activist. And I think in some of his writings, a pro-Islamist, activist too. But
what I had discovered with him, I was pretty sure. Yeah, Hatem Bazian, from the little bit of research I had, there was some indicators that when he was a student that he had connections to Hamas. Whether they are direct, there is more speculation than any direct correlations, but it sounded like there was some direct connections from what I looked at. I did want to go a slight other direction, simply because
sure.
You mentioned something very important, which I actually discussed in my last show, which was the influence on textbooks. Now, I know that you have written some wonderful articles on this, and this has to do, again, with the professors. I've talked about how it's not the social studies teacher's fault that they're getting this crap, that it's getting influenced before it even gets into their hands. And the difficulty, again, is that you have Islamist professors telling people things that aren't necessarily true, which, again, should disqualify them from serving in their positions, because lying to students should be considered, academic malfeasance. It should be considered the horror of the most unbelievable horror. It's crazy. So let me get back to this. Could you tell us a little bit more about the influence on textbooks?
Well, I found the Middle East studies professors intersect textbooks and curriculum for K-12 education in a couple of different ways. One is that they often serve in a capacity of approving material for textbooks. We know that there's so many problems with these materials, and not just being biased, but so much of it being untrue and sort of a whitewashing, especially when it comes to Islamic history, and, you know, not so subtle put downs of Christians and Jews. So they help approve textbooks, and they also set up teacher training programs and provide curriculum. That's becoming more and more of a problem, and we want to sort of devote a little more attention to that. But one place that does that is in Georgetown, Saudi-funded Prince Ali bin Talal Center for Muslim Christian Understanding, which is anything but its title. They have a, if you go to their website, they have a teacher training program, and they provide all kinds of material. And it's very attractive too to teachers that are underfunded, and you know, the money's not trickling down to the classroom. They have these cushy centers that provide all kinds of materials. There's also a couple of organizations out there. There's one called the Palestine Teaching Trunk, I believe it is, that provides these trunks of material. I think they're up in Washington State. This is sort of happening all over. And you know, and this curriculum is obviously completely biased. And then sometimes they provide, you know, will set up speakers. We've had all kinds of inappropriate situations with speakers and even some little field trips where there's a blurring of the lines between teaching about religion and actually proselytizing. And we don't hear enough from the ACLU on that, although they did jump in once in Minneapolis. But so that's where, that's how the field kind of worms its way in. They help, they're sort of the gatekeepers in part with some of the textbooks, and they provide curriculum and training to teachers. And so you have, you know, a case of where you, the wolf, I'm going blank on the expression here, but the wolf in the hen house, I think, is the term there.
And, yeah, the fox in the hen house.
Yeah, fox in the, oh, thank you.
It's a, so actually, it's, one of my articles is that labeled that. This is, again, as a social, I am a special ed social studies teacher, and I look at these things, that, and when you start changing histories to make your view look correct, I think that is a huge danger for Americans as a whole. I want to thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Ms. Stillwell. We're down to the end of the hour.
Thanks so much. I'm going to go through the chat, say
thank you to the people in the chat room, and again, announce who we are. And thank you. You've been a great guest. I hope someday to have you back to spend more time learning from you as well. Thank you, Mrs. Stillwell. It's Ms. Stillwell,
I love
right?
That.
Thank you.
I know it's been great. We could do this for another hour, I'm sure.
Yeah, I've been asked to do a two-hour show, and I'm chickening out until I get a little bit more confident. This is only my second show, and you are my first guest, and I am so thankful that you decided to say yes.
I am honored.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
All right, you have a nice evening. Thank you again for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you.